Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 20, Text number 31. Tajman madhvakti yuktasya yogno bhai madhatmanaha nyagyanam natcha bhai ragyam praiha sheyo bhavendiha. Tasman madhvakti yuktasya yogno bhai madhatmanaha nagyanam natcha vairagyam praiha sheyo bhavendiha. Tasmat, therefore, madhvakti yuktasya, of one who is engaged in my loving service, yoganaha, of a devotee, vai, certainly, mat atmana, whose mind is fixed in me, na, not, jnanam, the cultivation of knowledge, na, nor, cha, also, vairagyam, the cultivation of renunciation, preyaha, generally, sheyaha, the means of achieving perfection, bhavet, may be, iha, in this world. Translation. Therefore, for a devotee engaged in my devotional service, with mind fixed on me, the cultivation of knowledge and renunciation is generally not the means of achieving the highest perfection within this world. Purport. A surrendered devotee of Lord Krishna does not seek perfection through the cultivation of knowledge and renunciation outside the loving service of the Lord. Devotional service to Lord Krishna, being itself the supreme transcendental process, never depends upon the secondary methods involving the cultivation of knowledge and renunciation. By chanting and hearing the glories of the personality of Godhead, a devotee automatically realizes all knowledge. And as the devotee's attachment to the Lord increases, he automatically gives up attachment for the inferior material nature. The Lord has explicitly declared in the previous verses that a devotee should not try to solve his lingering problems by means other than devotional service. Although a sincere devotee has surrendered heart and soul in loving service to the Lord, there may be lingering material attachments that prevent the devotee from perfectly realizing transcendental knowledge. Devotional service, however, will automatically eradicate such lingering attachments in due course of time. If the devotee tries to purify himself through cultivation of knowledge and renunciation, which fall outside the scope of devotional service, there is danger of his being deviated from the Lord's lotus feet and falling down completely from the transcendental path. One who endeavors for purification outside the loving service of the Lord has not actually understood the transcendental potency of bhakti yoga and does not appreciate the extent of Lord Krishna's mercy. Within this world, one's heart is bound by sex attraction, which disturbs one's meditation on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Intoxicated by contact with women, the conditioned soul becomes artificially proud and forgets his loving service, servitude to the Lord. Through determined cultivation of knowledge and detachment, a conditioned soul may try to purify himself without the mercy of Lord Krishna, but such false pride is to be given up, just as one must give up the false pride of material attraction. When pure devotional service to the Lord is available to a conditioned soul, attraction to other processes is certainly a deviation in his devotional career. Material desire stubbornly residing within the heart can be vanquished by taking full shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Without false confidence in one's own cultivation of knowledge and renunciation, one should depend fully on the mercy of Lord Krishna and at the same time strictly follow the rules and regulations of Bhakti Yoga as instructed by the Lord Himself. Kasman madhavakti yuktasya yogino vayamadatmanaha na gyanam nachad vairagyam prayasyo bhavediha. Therefore, for a devotee engaged in my loving service with mind fixed on me, the cultivation of knowledge and renunciation is generally not the means of achieving the highest perfection within this world. Om agyan dimanjasya jananjana sarakya. Chakshuram militanjina tasmai shi gurave namaha. So here Lord Krishna is giving instruction to his very dear devotee Uddhava. Lord Krishna, of course, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that has been declared by Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita, also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and in many of the various scriptures also it is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam that there are many different incarnations of the Lord, but Lord Sri Krishna is the original source of all incarnations and expansions and empowered avatars of the Lord. So that is declared in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna declares himself to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it is also declared by all the acharyas. Ramanujacharya in India, there are four Vaishnava Sampradayas headed by Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Nimbakacharya, Vishnu Swami, and all of those acharyas and all of their followers have all declared Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even Sankaracharya, the leader of the impersonalist sect in India, he has also declared that Krishna is the Supreme. So, and in fact, Sankaracharya didn't comment upon the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam very, very clearly describes Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the shelter of all material and spiritual potencies. Especially in the Bhagavad Gita, it describes some of Krishna's material potencies, but in the Srimad Bhagavatam there is a vast description more so of Krishna's spiritual potencies. And in the Bhagavad Gita it was perhaps for those who are impersonalists, it is difficult, but somehow they have managed to find a way to state that Krishna is impersonal. Although Krishna describes himself as a person, and Arjuna, his disciple, accepts that Krishna is a person, so both the master and the disciple accept that Krishna is the supreme person, the personality of Godhead. Somehow or another, some impersonalists can find that he is impersonal. So this is very difficult to understand, you know, how one could do that. If the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita is saying, I'm a person, and the disciple is accepting, Arjuna is accepting, yes, you are a person, you are the supreme person, and yet somehow someone can see that, oh no, Krishna is impersonal. But by word jugglery, in order to bewilder the atheistic people, Sankaracharya, although personally accepting Krishna as the supreme person, because he was an incarnation of Lord Shiva, to bewilder the impersonalists, he, with some word jugglery, he created some atheistic philosophy where people would accept the Lord as impersonal. But he didn't touch the Srimad Bhagavatam, he didn't comment on the Srimad Bhagavatam, because it is just not possible to actually find some, you know, impersonal you know, understanding there of Krishna. So Krishna is accepted by everyone as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he is speaking to one of his most confidential devotees, is Uddhava. So there are many confidential devotees, there are many wonderful devotees of the Lord who have surrendered everything to Krishna. Arjuna, of course, is one such devotee, and we see that Arjuna, in all circumstances, whether everything was going very nicely or whether there was some big problems being created by atheistic people, Arjuna was always surrendered to Krishna. But we see that actually in the personality of Uddhava, his level of devotion and surrender is considered to be even more elevated than that of Arjuna. And therefore, Krishna is personally, directly instructing him. And he is saying to Uddhava that, you know, there is no need for you to practice any other method of purification other than bhakti yoga. So there are different methods of purification. There is which generally fall into the classifications of karma yoga, where one has an intention to perform some activity to get a material result, and yet by sacrificing some of the results, or eventually all of the results, to the Supreme, one becomes purified through karma yoga, by connecting with the Supreme. By that purificatory process, of course, one cannot achieve complete perfection by karma yoga. One may be able to attain the heavenly planets, but one cannot actually get liberation from the material world as long as one has some material purpose to fulfill in the material world. One cannot be liberated. So within karma yoga, there is still some concept that one is the material body, and one has some purpose to fulfill in relationship to the material body. But gradually, by that process, one can become purified enough to come to the platform of transcendental knowledge, where one begins to cultivate the understanding that one is a spirit soul and not the material body. So by giving up fruitive activities and material activities, even those that may award elevation to the heavenly planets, a person cultivates renunciation and knowledge of the difference between matter and spirit, and tries to cultivate detachment from matter. That purification, of course, can lead to liberation, but it does not lead to an understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even that impersonal liberation is not very safe, because the spirit soul, without knowledge of his eternal activities in the spiritual world, is always left somewhat hankering for activities which bring transcendental pleasure. So one cannot be, one cannot be inactive. It is good that one is inactive materially, but one then has to take up one's spiritual activities. Just like, if there is, sometimes people go out on a, boating. They go out into the ocean, and they're thinking, oh, this is very wonderful. There's just myself, hundreds of miles of sea all around, and just the blue sky, and there's nothing else. But, you can stay there. How long can you stay there? If someone said, oh, that is very nice, you stay there forever. stay out in the middle of the ocean, don't ever come back. How, after 2 days, a couple of weeks, and then, people who have been out in the ocean, they start going crazy and this. So because there has to be some activity, some relationship like this, and this is the nature of the spirit soul. So impersonal liberation cannot actually satisfy the spirit soul, and there's a danger that the spirit soul may actually come back to the material world seeking material pleasure for the sake of, some activity, some pleasure. Nor does jnana yoga, simply renouncing the material world and cultivating knowledge of the spirit, but there is no opportunity to cultivate knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Krishna says bhakti yoga is the complete process, because some of the jnana yogis may also, or even the karma yogis may also take up astanga yoga, whereby they may try to get some meditate upon the super soul within the heart. So again, it is possible, certainly in this age of Kali, the yoga process where people go to a yoga school and they pay a certain amount of money, and then they go back into their normal activities. There is just eating, mating, sleeping. So they, for half an hour, they practice their yoga, and they may, some of them may do that for some time each day. A lot of them may just practice at that yoga class, half an hour, 1 hour a week. Some of them may be more dedicated. They may practice in the morning and the evening. But even, in this day and age, the sort of farcical methods of yoga where one remains attached to the senses, to sex life, there's no possibility of actually becoming a yogi unless one is completely celibate. One has to completely withdraw from all the senses and the sensual activities and sensual thoughts. So the yogis have to find some, you know, very quiet place where they can, you know, sit and meditate actually, you know, continually, practically. And they close their eyes, they half close their eyes. If they open their eyes, they will see the forms, the material, you know, that will attract them to sex life. And if they close their eyes, they will just go to sleep like this. So they have to half close their eyes. And if a yogi meditates and their eyes are open and they can see the material world, the very nature of the material world will attract them. It will remind them. And therefore, we see that Subhari Muni, he meditated for many, many thousands of years underwater, and but when, you know, because his eyes weren't closed enough, he saw two fish, you know, mating, and that was enough that it stirred up, you know, the desires. They just sit dormant within the heart, and just something, and then immediately he wanted to enjoy that sexual pleasure, even though he was a very, very powerful yogi. And of course, he ended up with 50 wives. Yeah. And after many, many, many years of, let's say, trying to enjoy, he realized, you know, this is pathetic. I'm pathetic. I was a great yogi, and now I have, you know, wasted all this time. And then he again, you know, took up his yoga practice. But we can see that it's very, very difficult, you know, those, because unless there is some great transcendental pleasure, then even the yogis, you may even get a glimpse of Paramatma realization, but without taking up service to the Supreme Lord within the heart, there is no pleasure from love. Because ultimately, just like everyone in this world, they're saying, we want peace. So what is the basis of peace? The basis of peace is love. There's no question of peace whether one is a yogi or whether one is a politician, you know, on any platform. There's no question of peace because the basis of peace is love. And without that love, there cannot be good relationships with others. And without that love, there's no satisfaction within one's own heart. So there's no question of peace. So unless even one becomes a great yogi, a Stanga yogi, unless they actually come to the point of bhakti yoga, or taking up service to the super soul, the Supreme Lord, within the heart, then there's no question of peace. But actually, the super soul within the heart is not a very conducive form for personal service. And generally, if one wants to serve the Lord within the heart, that Supreme Lord, Shiradakshay Vishnu, when Shiradakshay Vishnu understands that a devotee wants to render service to the Lord within the heart, then he manifests in a particular form of the Lord, eternal form of the Lord, which is just suitable for that devotee to engage in devotional service to. all of the various incarnations of the Lord, they respond to the dictation or the indication of the super soul within the heart, Shivadakshaya Vishnu. Therefore, it's said that all the incarnations appear through Shivadakshaya Vishnu. But of all the various incarnations of the Lord, generally one can have a relationship with the Lord in the various incarnations in servitude. One may be able to render service. But if one wants to have an intimate relationship with the Lord in friendship, parental love or conjugal love, then actually one has to take up service to Lord Sri Krishna, generally. Because the form of Krishna is the form, what is it? Akila Rasamrita. What's it? What? Murti. Akila Rasamrita Murti. The Lord Krishna is the form of you know, that can satisfy all the rasas or all the tastes or humors that one can get from loving transactions. So Krishna says that you know, whether one is a kami, yogi, jnani, you know, these give a certain amount of purification, but they do not bring the spirit soul to his constitutional position of happiness. Those processes can purify one to some degree of material, you know, to more and more of material contamination, but they can't bring the spirit soul to his eternal constitutional position as the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, situated in an eternal loving relationship. That is the very nature. The very nature of the spirit soul is to be a servant, but a servant of the Supreme Lord. And when that service attitude is not there, then the spirit soul, or the jiva, is not in its content. It has no value in one sense. Or his activities, the spirit soul has value, but the activities of the spirit soul outside of his constitutional position have no proper value. So this is called Dharma, or Sanatana Dharma, or the eternal service, the eternal activity of the spirit soul. Just like sugar, if it's not sweet, you know, its Dharma, or its constitutional nature is to be sweet. If we have some sugar and there's no sweetness, what is its value? It has no. Or if you have chili, it's not hot. The spirit soul is a servant, and if there's no service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the value is not there. Actually, if one does not directly serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then one is forced to serve the Supreme Lord, but not directly, but with the intervention of the material energy. So one is serving the Lord by serving his material energy, but that service is under a very harsh taskmaster, Maya, Maya, or the illusory energy. One may say, I will not, you know, surrender to Krishna and serve Him, then there is only one other option, and that is that you must serve Maya. But serve you must, because that's the constitutional position. Just like, the value, you know, is not there when we're not serving the Supreme Lord. Just like if you walk along the road and you find a screw, you know, on the ground, it has no real value. It probably belongs to some machine, you know, it's fallen out of an old rattly car that's driving past. You may pick it up. You don't find people, you know, chasing after you. Oh, you know, that'd be $5. That screw is laying, has so much value. It's laying on the ground because as soon as it becomes, falls out of the machine, it's worth nothing. No one cares. You pick it up. But if you have a machine at home and you lose one screw, the same one that was lying in the road that has no value, and you go to purchase that screw, oh yeah, that'll be, you know, that'll be $5. Oh, a little screw, yeah, $5. Because they know it, now it has value. The same insignificant little screw, you know. And before it was worth nothing, but now they know you want it and it has value out there at cost. So as soon as the screw has its place within the machine, it has immense value. Otherwise it has no value. And under the material energy, really our activities, they have no value. They have very little value. Wasting time. We see that people, you know, just up the road, of course, they're building the new apartments. And they will cost, you know, $1 million or something, each apartment, something. So much work, trucks coming in, so many workers. And you'll see, if we, you know, sometime in the future, they'll tear them all down. You know, and, you know, like all the houses around here, you'll see, you know, at one stage, you're building them up, and then soon, they'll tear them all down like this. And they'll put something else up. And then after some time, they'll tear them all down again. And then they'll put something else up like this. So this is the nature of Maya, that she will keep you engaged unlimitedly. We have, you know, when we start out as little children, we have no idea how hard we're going to have to work in life under Maya. We have, you know, no idea, but Maya makes us work so hard, and we struggle for everything. You know, throughout the course of a lifetime, if we have that desire to try and enjoy in the material energy, she'll just keep us working, and giving us the tiniest little bit of, you know, occasional sense gratification, which is really usually just another form of suffering, and you know, and then more work because of that sense gratification. Then you'll have to work 10 times harder as a reaction. That's a fact. It's you know, people in this world, they work until they froth at the mouth. So much working, very, very difficult. And at the end, you know, we spend our whole life, you know, making a nice house for ourselves, you know, and making a nice family. And getting nice bank balance, you know, working so hard to get this career. And at the end, Maya comes in, takes it all the way, just like you build a sandcastle by the beach, and then the waves come in and smash it all to pieces, and then you build it all up again, like the big, big sand, and the waves come in, smash it all down again, like this. So that is the nature of the material energy. But if we're attached to sex life, we'll think, ah, yes, you know, but that I'm really enjoying, you know, is a lifetime of frothing at the mouth, working, struggling, and always fearful, and defending what little I've been able to get at that. So difficult, but a little bit of sex life. Oh, I'm the happiest person in the whole world like this. This is the nature of my act. So, but, you know, so there's no real value in serving material energy. But real service, which has value, is service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that service is purifying, more purifying than any other process. It is more purifying than Karma Yoga. It is more potent. It is more potent, it is more purifying than Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Astanga Yoga. And apart from being more purifying and more powerful, it is the only process by which the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be revealed. And it is the only process which can reinstate the spirit soul in their eternal constitutional position. But, therefore, Krishna is saying that, you know, one should not take up any other process. Sometimes we see that devotees, they take to devotional service, and because they don't practice devotional service properly, they then doubt the potency of devotional service and may actually then take to some other process. Or they may fall away from devotional service, thinking that I will not attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We see here, because Uddhava is a great devotee, Krishna is personally standing before him, giving him instruction. That is the result, that the only way one can understand the Supreme Lord is by revelation. Unless the Supreme Lord reveals himself to us, there is no other way that we can actually understand. Even if we study the books, if we research every other form of knowledge by mental speculation, by purification, by, you know, austerities, by any other process, we cannot realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead except by revelation, by service, by taking up bhakti yoga. So bhakti yoga is very, very purifying, the most purifying, the most powerful, the most potent, and it is the only process which can reveal the Supreme Personality of Godhead and fully reveal the spirit soul's eternal constitutional position as in relationship, in a loving relationship with the Supreme Lord. But if we don't practice bhakti properly, then, as stated, one may doubt, one may think, oh, you know, well, I've tried to practice bhakti, I tried chanting Hare Krishna and worshipping the deities and doing this, but there's still some desires within my heart, and therefore it must be the fault of bhakti yoga. Maybe Krishna, you know, although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, maybe he's got this one wrong, you know. Maybe we should, you know, try jnana like this. But it's our application to the process. We have to follow it properly. The mantra, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, if we can once chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra properly, just once, not even 16 rounds, not even one round, not even one full mantra, just once, you're immediately liberated. That is the potency. You know, there is no other process which can, you know, give that you know, quick results. It just once you chant the Hare, just chant one name of God properly, just once, and you're immediately liberated from all material contamination. That is the potency. But of course, you know, properly means you know one has to chant properly, and chanting properly means that we are chanting and surrendering to Krishna, that my only desire is to serve Krishna with love, and you know all other things which are there within the material world, I do not want them. So if we actually chant in that mood and maintain that mood while we're chanting and serving, immediately come to the liberated platform. And not only that, then by that sort of chanting, one very, very quickly cultivates pure love of God, which is very, very rare. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, amongst many, many thousands of people, hardly one, you know, is even striving for perfection. You know, if you look at all the people in this world, how many people do you meet in the course of your day, apart from the devotees always around the temple, of course, that are, you know, just striving constantly? Their main goal of life is that I will be self-realized and God-realized, you know, this very lifetime as soon as I possibly can. How many people do you meet like that? No. It's, you know, what's the stock market? You know, what was on television? What's at the races? What, you know, what's on the menu? You know, like this. What, you know, who's going out with who? Or who just dropped who? You know. So, but if you gather all those people up that are there, hardly one of them has actually achieved perfection, that they actually realize that they're a spirit soul, that they're spirit, not matter. And so how rare are they? But if you gather up all of those, you hardly find one devotee of the Lord. And amongst the devotees, if they actually follow the process and chant Hare Krishna very, very nicely, they will actually, you know, very quickly come to this platform of pure love of God, prema bhakti. So actually, Srila Prabhupada tells a little story just to illustrate how we should chant the mantra properly, chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra properly. So one of his friends was actually he was telling this story to Srila Prabhupada, that there was his associate, a snake had come into his house. It was a poisonous snake, very, very dangerous, and he was terrified. So they called the snake charmer. So the snake charmer came, and when the snake charmer came, there was Prabhupada's friend and another one. They were there, and they witnessed this snake charmer. He chanted a mantra, and then he said, "Now the snake won't harm me," and he just, you know, collected up the snake and took it away. So then these people, one was a doctor, I think Dr. Bosch, Prabhupada's friend, he thought, you know, I don't know whether I can believe that this person just chanted a mantra and this snake is not going to bite him. He's just become, you know, docile. I think that there's some trick there. So he and his friend, they went to the snake charmer, and when they went to the snake charmer, they said, "I think that these snakes, you know, don't really have fangs, and all the poison has been removed like this." And the snake charmer said, "No, no, no." And so he showed them some of the snakes, showed the fangs, he showed the poison dripping, you know, from the fangs like this, and they understood. And then he said, so then he went round, they're all in little, you know, captives or the cages or what have you. He let them all out. So within a short time, the Prabhupada's friend and his associate were surrounded by poisonous snakes of all different types, cobras and tiger snakes, this one, all just crawling around the room. And they were absolutely terrified. And the snake's charmer said, "You're okay, as long as I'm here, chanting my mantra, nothing will happen." And then they understood, and that it was a fact, they could see that he had full control. These snakes were crawling in, and as long as he was there, they wouldn't bite him, they wouldn't bite them, everything was fine. So they understood he's chanting that mantra. So even, you know, I'm not sure if they're still there, probably a few, not many. Even some of the Muslims know this heart, but you know, in Prabhupada's time, there were still several, you know, that he knew of, and they would just chant the mantra. But as he said, they have to chant it properly. It is a hidden art. It's not that they can just give the mantra and someone, anyone can chant it. There's a method to chanting the mantra so that it actually, you know, takes effect. But that mantra, that's just a material mantra. You know, it's not a spiritual mantra. It's nothing compared to the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is a spiritual mantra with the potency coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like, you know, the sun is a material source of energy. How much energy is just pouring out of the sun for billions of years, just massive amounts of energy just pouring out, and it just, you know, just stays, it just never dwindles. It's not like day by day, it's just dwindling. Massive amounts. We cannot imagine, just, you know, unlimited practically. But it's a material thing, material source of energy. The Maha Mantra is non-different from Krishna, the Supreme Lord, and it is the source of all spiritual potency. So that without doubt, if one chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and chants properly, then one will, you know, liberation is very easily attained, but pure love of God, which is very, very rare, that can also be attained in this very lifetime. So I'll just leave it there. Anyone has any questions or comments?
Thank you very much for a very nice explanation. As you said, Srila Prabhupada was given the best mantra. Best mantra possible. After chanting all shastras and everything, the most effective mantra in Kali Yuga. There is no doubt about it. Anybody can try. Even Siddha Bhakura, that tree, you know, in Jagannath Puri, under whom the tree Haridasa was chanting, when the king people wanted to cut that tree, the tree shrunk completely. Even the tree was so conscious, you can see, completely shrank.
Was it Siddha Bhakura? That's a spiritual tree then. I remember one day I read about that tree. I read about that tree and I was thinking, gee, I would love to have a little piece of that. And then I was at the temple, and that same morning I spoke to the devotee and I was saying, gee, I had this desire, and you know, he said, I have some. And he gave me a little piece which I keep on my altar. So just within 1 second. But Maha Mantra, of course, is the most effective in any age, not just Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, you need the most potent, powerful process. So other ages, you could take the slow path. You know, if you live for 1,000 years or more, you can take the karma yoga and gradually become a jnani and a yogi and gradually become a a bhakti yoga. In Kali Yuga, you can't guarantee that you'll live for another 7 seconds. It is such a dangerous place. It is so dangerous. We can't guarantee that we'll even live, get past childhood, teenage years. You know, I don't know how many people I know that never thought they'd live to 20. You know, so many people, they just think that these days. I never thought I'd live past 20, you know. It's so dangerous. So, apart from the contaminating influence, the degrading influence of Kali Yuga is so powerful that we need the most powerful medicine. And a doctor always prescribes, the right medicine for the right circumstances. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, who is Krishna himself, who appeared 500 years ago, he prescribed Harinam, 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 Eva Kiva.
500 years.
What's that?
500 years.
Yeah.
Another commandment was saying only, see, we all are, each soul has come with some karmic baggage. When we come to this world, like for 2 years old, having a retinal blastoma, he died within 6 months.
Yes.
Each soul, that's why we have got different types of bodies according to our karmas. So that karmic baggage. So the whole subtle body is not the bhakti process, as we hear in a few verses before. The whole thing is in the mind.
That's the fact. Any other comments or questions? Well, with devotees who take up the path of devotional service, they're more and more in the association of Krishna, and there is some lingering association or attraction to the material energy. It is a different position from the non-devotees who are just completely under the material energy and just have no connection with the Supreme Lord at all. But so to one degree or another, those excursions into Maya mentally or through one's activities, they become reduced. And they take many, many different forms. But again, it depends how a devotee takes to the process that, one can become, like Maharaj Katvanga, one can become Krishna conscious fully and remain on that platform within a second. Or we can spend, many, many years just sort of hanging on to a little bit of Maya within our mind, within our heart, within our consciousness. And to that degree, we can't, directly serve Krishna in pure devotional service, to the degree that we, drag Maya with us, to that degree we can't engage in pure devotional service. And when we do regress to allow Maya into our consciousness, at that point we can't consider ourselves to be liberated. The liberation is very easily achieved, but we sort of, choose to sort of wander back into that conditioned state, even as a devotee. But liberation means that there's no more attraction or attachment to Maya, And as long as one stays on that platform, which one can do within a second, and one can remain on that platform if one chooses, by always chanting nicely and serving nicely, then one is always liberated. So it's really the individual devotee's personal choice and use of their own independence. The danger is that if we, as described here, if we play around with Maya, as Prabhupada said, you know, you play with Maya, she'll kill you. You know, so we may be just sometimes mucking about, you know, with the material energy, flirting with the material energy, but she has a very deadly, you know, she's just like a, you know, like a shark. Crocodile, just, you know, they're looking at you, you think they're smiling. It's like one sannyasi once said that, you know, I've taken sannyas and, you know, they say that the material energy increases 100-fold when you take sannyas. I haven't felt anything, you know, everything is really. And another sannyasi said, oh, Maya's just rolling up her sleeves. You know. Don't flirt with it, don't take it lightly, you know. And unfortunately it's very true that sannyas did get a king hit from Maya, there's no longer sannyasi. So you know, it's dangerous also, so we have to be very careful. Same with Rasikananda, he was also bitten by a snake, and I think he continued to just engage in kirtan, and he was dancing all night, and he should have died but just didn't. By not only by mantra can they control the snake, but by mantra and herbs you can actually also nullify the venom. So Rasikananda, he was bitten by a snake and should have died, but just kept chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and dancing all night, and he was fine. A little bit groggy, but he was fine. We see also that, I think it was it Jagannath Das Babaji, or might have been Gaurakishore Das Babaji. There was some property, and someone said, I have some deities, or a deity inside this shed, but I can't go in there because I know there's a poisonous snake in there. And so he actually went in. I think the snake went out. He found the deity. It was Sonagoda, that deity. And so he worshipped that deity for some time. But, you know, there was no real fear. So, I'll go to the Prabhupada.